Looking for a podcast about The Mandalorian? Well, hey, this is the way. It's The Mandalorian coverage here on Post Show Recaps, talking about Chapter 13, The Jedi. I'm Josh Wigler. I am not a Jedi, and neither is Kevin Mahadeo.
That is false. I'm very much a Jedi. I've just been in hiding for a very long time. I know there's a lot of questions.
If I've ever seen one.
A lot of questions about how I'm around and where I've been, but it's okay. I don't think that matters. As long as I'm here, that's what matters.
Potential Jedi Master, LaTanya Starks. LaTanya, how's it going?
Pretty good. I get to be here talking with you fine fellows about this excellent episode of television today.
What a great time on The Mandalorian this week. An episode that many are calling the best of the bunch of them all. And I am not here to refute that because it was a great time and I loved it so much. The Jedi. Finally, an uncontroversial piece of Star Wars called The Jedi produced in this millennium. That's nice. It's good to have good things again.
I feel like there's controversy here. Grogu, there's no controversy. It's a great name. We're still going to call him Baby Yoda. I don't think I'm going to call him Grogu, but it's fine.
LaTanya, I was talking to someone. We just did the patron cast with the patrons of Post Show Recaps.
And
I was talking to Winston. Yes. Winston and I were chatting about the name Grogu. And you see how happy Baby Yoda is that people know his name now? How could you be mad at Grogu, ultimately?
Yeah, so the case for Grogu ultimately was made to me by another friend that I have named Josh, and I apologize. I know I'm
there
always supposed
only
to have
be one.
One,
so after the podcast, I am going to ask you to make a choice. I won't make you to do that
okay,
on the air, though.
That's fine. He listens to this podcast, but that's okay.
All right, Josh, make your case for why I should have room in my heart for another Josh.
You have room in your heart for a lot of Bens. I feel like you can.
That's it. That's all I've got. Ben Kenobi.
So, yes, his little ears when Mando said Grogu.
You know, he just goes.
He's so excited.
He's so good.
Right?
He's so happy.
So, you know, as opposed to when Mando calls him kid. So the argument for Grogu, in my opinion, or, you know, as persuaded to me by the other Josh in my life, is that you call people what they want to be called, right? Or in this case, you call whatever species Yoda is, this baby Yoda is what they want to be called. It's a pretty new trend that's widely spreading, but it's a trend that's existed in marginalized communities forever. So he likes being called Grogu. I guess we have to call him Grogu.
Yeah, but we're not going to not call him Baby Yoda.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's what happens.
We could also just make room in our hearts to call him Grogu, and maybe it'll grow goo on us.
It's additive, right? You know, it's he's the child, he's kid, he's Baby Yoda, he's Grogu, Grogu. Look at that little guy. You know, I think we have room in our hearts for all of this. Kevin
just reminded me very much of my dog Gus, like that look where he just said his name, and he's like, what? Like, yeah. He knows his name. That's how I read that, and I know that like they're way more sentient than dogs because he's 50 years old, but technically Gus at this point is probably around that age, so yeah. You know, just very much reminded me more of like a dog behavior of like when he hears his name, he was just like, huh, that's me, you know, like, what did you say my name, do you need something from me? No. All right, I'm gonna go back to my still, watching this fire.
Still waiting for that moment from kitty cats. They don't seem to know shit. But that's
your,
all right.
Your cats don't. My cat knows his name.
They don't yet. They don't. They know like tone of voice. They're like, oh, they're talking to me. Oh God, I'm in trouble. You know, context they get. Grogu seems to get that as well. So perhaps, as LaTanya says, the name shall grow on goo. If you do not like it yet. Perhaps you will like it over time, but that is just like one of a lot of things to talk about with this episode. There's the reveal of the child's name. There is the debut of Rosario Dawson as fan favorite Star Wars character, Ahsoka Tano, first live action appearance for this character. And I know people are like enormously excited about that. I think especially if you are a fan of the Clone Wars and Rebels, you are really, really pumped about that. But I think it's also kind of hard to not just like be psyched about a Jedi on The Mandalorian is cool. And the way that they did that, I think is really, really fun. There is the name dropping of another really important character from Star Wars lore, Grand Admiral Thawne, who comes from like the Legends era when they did the Thrawn trilogy, the books, and then they put him into the canon via Star Wars Rebels. And now, like, you got to imagine we're going to get him in live action at some point in time. That's really crazy and exciting. We'll talk that through as well. Michael Biehn.
Yes, that's a big breakout for me. Yes. It's like, hey, there's my guy. That was what I was very excited about. Like, it took me a moment, though. Like, I will not lie. Like, he showed up and I was like, God, that person looks familiar. And then he spoke and I'm like, God, that voice is so familiar. And I was about to look it up, like close, like halfway through, I was going to look it up. And I was just like, oh, snap, Corporal Hicks. Yeah, that's Michael Biehn. That's Hicks. Yeah. That's Kyle Reese.
That's John Connor's dad.
Yeah. And then, you know, it sadly occurred to me. I was like, oh, I didn't recognize him because he's old now. But like, he doesn't look that much older, honestly. Like, he doesn't look bad. But it was just one of those moments where I was like, why did it take me so long? And I was like, oh, right, because I'm so used to him being like, I rewatch, like, you know, Aliens a lot, Josh, as you do as well. So, like, I'm used to that is Michael Biehn, that is Hicks. So, like, it took me a moment to, like, filter through my brain and realize, like, oh, time has passed.
Time has passed. Time has passed. And we're going to pass the time talking about all the things that happened on Star Wars. We're talking about the fact that the erstwhile Oberyn Martell has a spear again. Get nervous. Start to be...
didn't even occur to me. Oh, my God. That's so exciting.
He's got a helmet, thankfully. So that should work out better for him this time. It's also his show. So you would assume that it's going to work out better for him this time. So there's just a Beskar beats lightsabers. Like, there's a lot to talk about. Yeah. You know, this is a really fun episode to talk about. And I really can't wait. Before we get into it, let's just take a quick second to thank our friends over at Pluto TV. Support for this podcast comes from Pluto TV. Need an escape? Drop into Pluto TV for a world of free TV. Stream hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and shows, all for free. Yeah, free. No subscriptions, no fees. Imagine 24/7 channels of Narcos, CSI, Star Trek, Survivor, and everything else from hit movies to binge-worthy TV shows, the latest news, live sports, comedy, and more. What are you waiting for? Download the free Pluto TV app for Android, iPhone, Roku, and Fire TV and start streaming now. Pluto TV, drop in, watch free. All right, let's talk about the Jedi. Latanya, where do we even start with an episode that has as much going on as the Jedi?
Well, she's here and I love her. First of all, let's start there. I love her. I love Ahsoka Tano.
Yes.
Let's start at the beginning. It's a very good place to start.
I've heard that song before. it's the arrival of Ahsoka Tano on The Mandalorian, a brand spanking new character for many people who even would consider themselves like big Star Wars movie fans. Kevin, like, let's try that out on you. Is that the case for you? Because you're not, like, huge on Clone Wars and Rebels.
That is very accurate. This was a character that I had... It's the same thing, I think, with Thrawn. I had heard the name many times. And, like, if you showed me a picture and said, which of these is Ahsoka Tano, I'd probably be able to be like, that one. But if you said, what does Ahsoka Tano look like to me, I'd be like, I don't know. So, because I've seen, like, images, like, there's like, an ether of, like, the Rebels world, and I know names and stuff, but they're not connected until you, like, show me two things next to each other, but...
I hear Ahsoka Tano is better than Ezra.
See, like...
I don't know if that's true, I just wanted to use a better than Ezra joke, because Ezra's a character in Star Wars Rebels.
Yeah, I know, like, that's a perfect example. Know the name, I've heard the name, and if someone says, and it's not Ezra Miller, I know that much, but if someone says to me, what does Ezra the Jedi look like? I'd be like, well, I don't know. I don't know. He has a lightsaber.
So is that, like, Freddie Prinze Jr. or is Freddie Prinze Jr. a different guy? I don't know.
Yo, what? Is Freddie Prinze Jr. voicing a character in Star Wars Rebel?
Oh, Freddie Prinze Jr. Yeah. I believe voices a very important character in Star Wars Rebels. Yeah.
Can Freddie Prinze Jr. be the character in this? Because you know how excited that would make me, Josh.
I don't know. I have no idea. I can't tell you. I haven't watched all of Rebels yet. I'll tell you, the debut of Ahsoka Tano on this show, after much urging in the Post Show Recaps patron Discord over the last several weeks with, like, the slimmed down watch list to, like, get familiar with Mandalorian lore by watching, like, these select Clone Wars and Rebels episodes, which is what I was in the middle of doing. Seeing Ahsoka Tano on and seeing Rosario Dawson as that character and, like, seeing whatever she ends up evolving to made me really curious to see where she comes from. And I have been convinced, and I have begun this Clone Wars watch has. So I am officially in the thick of a Clone Wars watch. First time ever. There is something called the Ultimate Episode Order, which is It's a little bit of a riff on the chronological order that StarWars.com has put out in the past, that it's a, like a little bit of a fine-tuned version of that. We'll link to it in the show notes. It's a Reddit thread. I'm really enjoying myself, and I am about 3 hours removed from having watched Star Wars The Clone Wars, the theatrical release, which is where Ahsoka Tano debuts. And she, like, to see, like, so recently, like, her most recent appearance on Mandalorian and where she comes from, which is that Clone Wars movie, it's very fun. And people really apparently did not
hated her at the start.
That
movie. Hated her.
She keeps calling Anakin Sky Guy. And he calls her like Snips or something. I forget the name of the nickname that he gives her. But people did not care for her at the start.
So, a couple of things on that that I have questions on. One, how did you not say Mandalore? Like, what are you doing
for
Mandalorian lore? No, it's just a Mandalore.
Well, because a Mandalore is a thing.
It's true, but it's a pun, Josh. Understand how they work.
It's a pun, but it's a thing. Yeah. So it gets confusing. So I'm resisting it.
So when you kept saying...
Look at me, resisting a pun.
premiered
Josh
in...
is part of the resistance. The pun resistance.
That's it.
The pun resistance. but when you say that she appeared in the Clone Wars, when you said the movie, that confused the hell out of me. Because like when I hear Clone Wars the movie, I'm thinking episode two. So presumably there's two... movies here we are speaking of, because I was like, when did she show up in episode two?
We'll discuss it more later.
Yeah. So this is, I mean, and this just shows, right? Like, I'm very unfamiliar with this character, but that said, like, I think the character's debut was really exciting and really cool. I will admit, like, for 30 seconds when this character showed up, I was just like, I have questions. Where was this character the entire time? How did no one sense this character in the entirety of the original trilogy? Like, there's just a lot there that I have questions about. And then in the end, I like, after 30 seconds, I was like, you know what, it doesn't matter, I'm just happy to have a Jedi that's not related to a fucking Skywalker, like, does not have like a blood relation to a Skywalker or Palpatine, at least as far as I know, or until the end of the series. I don't know, she like, you know, rips off a mask and she's just, that is how Palpatine comes back, I don't know. But for now, I was very excited about that fact. I was excited to have a Jedi that was like new and different for me, and kind of disconnected enough. Like, I know, very connected from what everyone told me later, very connected to Anakin in the show and everything like that. But just, I mean, in terms of like just blood relation, was a nice change of pace.
LaTanya, talk me through your new favorite character.
Yeah.
Ahsoka Tano. Your first impressions of the character as she appears on the show and throughout the episode.
Is this the best character entrance we've had since Grogu? Little baby Yoda? I think it might be.
I'm trying to think of like who, I mean, how quickly we forget Francis.
Yes. Well, Francis has gotten her happy ever after with Francis, so you know. But yeah, I mean, she just looks so cool. They did an excellent job with the makeup here, and like the dual white lightsabers are just so unique in the way that she wields them. She's using her environment to fight and not just the sabers. And she is really undetectable on this kind of, like, you know, they describe it as a forest planet is what we hear from Bo-Katan. But it really looks more like, you know, the burnt embers of, you know, Mount Doom or something like that. It's just
a deforested planet.
Exactly. I mean, it's a terrible looking place. I know that for many people of the Star Wars fandom, this episode was 12 years in the making since Ahsoka first appeared in that ill-fated animated film that George Lucas handed over the character to Dave Filoni, and fans started to get the Ahsoka that they actually wanted. I've seen some Twitter accounts say that they think that the Mandalorian and its creators are finally making them feel like a part of the fandom for the first time, and that alone is beautiful. I also just think it's beautiful that, you know, this podcast does not have like a barrier to entry for Star Wars fans. It doesn't matter if you're like us and you haven't seen every little bit of the canon and non-canon Star Wars material, or if you haven't read everything that's out there. you know, this podcast welcomes everyone and this show seems to be doing the same thing. And it's great to see that pay off for the people who have been really deep into Star Wars forever and have been waiting for this character in live action forever. And it also pays off for us who are just starting to experience Ahsoka for the first time. It's also really cool that this episode aired on what would have been, I believe, Bruce Lee's 80th birthday. And it's starring his goddaughter, Diana Lee Inosanto, as the warlord magistrate, which is really, really cool. And we've got a showdown between two Latinx characters in Ahsoka and Mando, ultimately realizing that they're essentially on the same side. And then later we end up having an inside showdown that's in like a water garden Shogun assassin movie and an outside that's like a Western standoff. It's just so
take
well
a seat,
done.
Westworld season two.
Seriously, it takes several seats. And then maybe, you know, delete that season, with the exception of Kisuya.
Yeah.
But yeah, I loved it. I loved this episode and I loved Ahsoka so much. If I could just see more scenes of her with a kind smile, having a silent force bond with little Grogu, I'd be happy about it.
Yeah. And I wonder what that's going to look like. Is this like the introduction of Ahsoka into the Mandalorian as a main character? Is this really just like the realization of a character that still exists within the universe at this point in the continuity that they wanted to bring in the same way that they brought Bo-Katan in here? Do they have like long-term plans for them within this show? Or is this like planting the seeds of like, will there be an Ahsoka Tano show? Is that where she will go up against Grand Admiral Thrawn, who seems to be like a really key villain for her? I haven't read too much into it because now I really want to experience it. And I think that that is a really beautiful thing that I'm experiencing right now. And I'm really excited about being at the start of this journey of like, this is one of those moments. It's like, all right, I'm going to go back and I want to read the source material. I want to read the book that this is based on. I want to watch the cartoon. I want to see the animated series that this is based on. And that there are, you know, dozens and dozens of hours worth of content out there in which this character is either, the starring role on, or at least prominently featured, or just has like an important piece of the pantheon. And that's really exciting. And that was really fun to go and even though the Clone Wars theatrical movie isn't great, like the storyline is about Jabba the Hutt's son has been kidnapped. So there's like a baby Jabba in it. Forget baby Yoda. They call him Stinky is the name of the Kevin's about to walk off the podcast, it looks like. He's having a hard time with all of this.
I don't like any of this. I don't like these words.
He's a cute little hut. He's a sweet little kid. But Ahsoka is just like very like bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, really innocent, and also like really inventive and innovative. And immediately, like for me, knowing like where she's going, even if these are like sort of like the confusing days of figuring out this character, I'm just so pumped about that journey. And I think that that is something that is, I can't speak to what it must feel like to be someone who worshipped these stories and got so immersed in Star Wars that like Clone Wars and Rebels was your thing. Like while all of us have been ripping our hair out about like the new trilogy or whatever, like you knew that this was all there and all of this was like keeping you warm. And now you're getting to see that in live action must be such a powerful experience. The experience I can speak to is like this live action show is so exciting and so well put together that it's making me want to do like the really deep dive into the mythology. And that's a really beautiful feeling. And I think it's not just because the character is clearly so rich and so steeped in like a bedrock of material. But also to your point, Latani, the episode structure is just great. The fact that it culminates in these two very different showdowns, the sound design on that stuff, the way that a lightsaber battle has been articulated in live action. This, you know, it was unlike anything that I've seen before. It felt like a painting, that battle between Ahsoka and the Magistrate with the Beskar spear. It was so cool to watch Beskar be resilient against a lightsaber or a laser sword, as Mando liked to call it, which I believe has roots in the Phantom Menace of Jake Lloyd being like, well, tell me about your laser swords. So, you know, that's part of this. And all like in an episode that had like great Baby Yoda content, like just top to bottom, forget like the fact that this is like the payoff for a lot of fan investment over the course of, you know, a decade plus. I just thought it was a brilliantly constructed episode that really showcased Mando very well, how clever he was when he enters the town and knows like, okay, something's fishy here. I gotta be strategic. I gotta be smart. I can't just tip my hand. The fact that the magistrate just like looks at him and is like, you're a bounty hunter, right? And he's like, yeah.
Last I checked.
And she's like, you wanna kill this Jedi for me? He's like, I'll think about it. You know, yeah. He's not committing. He's not violating his things. It just the way that they played Mando in this episode, I thought was great. So top to bottom, just an absolute blast, just a total ride, just incredibly fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying, too, right? Like for me, when I saw this episode and knowing of the character, but seeing what the character was and how the character was portrayed and everything that was happening, it did also make me want to go back and watch a lot of the stuff that I've never watched. I probably won't because I'm the worst person ever, but it made me want to like do that. Like I had the feeling, right? And I say that, but like honestly, after hearing like, well, there's a watch order and maybe there's a cut down, it's honestly just daunting because of the number of episodes. I just can't.
It's a lot.
It's like
it's a lot.
I thought about doing a West Wing rewatch, and every time I think that in my head, I'm just like, how many episodes? It's the same thing like with Rebels, where I'm just like, I would love to get into it, but how many episodes? And same with Clone Wars. There's just a lot. But anyway. Agreed. Like there was such a synergy here. And I think that's so smart and was so well done. Like this type of like, now it's like my marketing side. I'm doing my fan side, like as a business marketer, an entertainment marketer. I'm just like, oh, it's so clever. Like this type of synergy that they're bringing in between the Rebel stuff that they were doing and presenting it here into the show. Like, and to have, like, it's going to have people curious and want to go back. So like, even from that standpoint, I was so impressed with it. And yeah, this character was so unique and interesting. We talk a lot about how does a show play for people who don't know? And I'm a person who doesn't know, right? I'm not like a complete Star Wars newbie. I know a lot about the world and everything. I just don't know certain bits and pieces like this. But I wasn't confused at all throughout. Like, I think the way they presented everything, the way the character was introduced, it, like a velociraptor just popping up, murdering someone, then disappearing again, was really great. Like, you talk about the fight scenes and how it's like a painting. I mean, this episode, more than anything, like we talked about how the show is like a Western, and I kept saying like, well, it's more like a samurai show. And this is the fusion of the two. Like this episode was pure samurai for everything that Ahsoka Tano was doing and pure Western for everything Mando was doing. Like you talk about the two show off. That is a gunslinger show off. And that is a samurai battle basically happening over there. And that's really cool. I really like that. I really liked how samurai-esque it was. You know, people talked about how this episode was like a Kurosawa film, and I definitely agree. Like, you know, standing at the end at the entrance and having to make their way down, you know, the house is like ripped straight out of like samurai films and stuff like that.
They're exact shots, I believe. There's a lot of like side by side comparisons right now.
100%, especially like right before the battle as they're standing off against each other. Like there's a lot, and it's so excellently done, so excellently shot. But the character was just so cool. And for the first time in a long time, like if you listen to this podcast, you heard me last week and how I feel about what happened to my love of Star Wars. I actually was excited about Jedis again. And like, that was a good feeling. Like, it's weird to have a feeling like that, to be like, oh my God, I like Jedis again. Like, Jedis are cool again to me. Like, there's something about that part of this mythos now that I'm like feeling again. And it was really awesome to have that feeling. And be excited about it, to see white lightsabers, and again with the samurai stuff, do like using the two lightsabers like samurai, you know, that samurai's always had, like, you know, the two swords, they had the katana and the wakizashi, like that's like a thing. So it was really awesome seeing all those things play into it for this character. And of course the interesting parts of just like, well, I can't train him because I knew someone who things went bad with them, and I'm like, I wonder who that could be.
I wonder who it could be. And that's a huge part of her storyline in the animated series, from what I understand. I have not been able to stop reading or watching YouTube videos long enough about this character and this episode to start my watch of the Clone Wars and Rebels, because I just want to start from the beginning after this episode. But I mean, there's just, from the kendo style fight that happens to the like Leone film that occurs outside, essentially. The fact that Diana Lee and Asanto's dad, Dan and Asanto, is a Filipino martial arts master who trained with Bruce Lee. And that woman is 53 years old. She's 53.
She's very good at what she does.
Yeah, I was just like, okay. I thought that, like, when I saw her standing upon the battlements that she directed in this town, as any warlord would do, that she looked like a badass bitch. But then when this fight started, I was like, okay, I need to step my game up because this woman is 53 years old.
Yeah. Wait, this exercise is wild. Can actually keep us looking young and fit? Jesus.
Who knew? It's a brand new concept that I'm really just learning about. But yeah, I mean, to both your points, this episode was epic in scale, scope, lore, everything. And also there was just a lot of heart in it as well. I mean, we talk about the Grogu stuff and just how his little face lit up when he was able to hear his name for the first time on this series. And we were able to hear his name, whatever reaction that we had to that the first time we heard it. And I won't lie, the first time I heard it, I was like, Grogu? Okay, sure.
But Cousin Grogery.
Cousin Grogery. But he was very excited about it, so that made me chuckle. We got Jedi training. We got little baby doing Jedi training, first with Ahsoka and then with Mando, which is all I wanted, and it happened.
I do have questions about that part of it, though, and more about, like, and again, this is such, like, not anything negative, but just, like, a curiosity, because, like, she mentioned that he had training previously. So, like, I was just, like, mathing in my head where I was just like, okay, if that's done, so, like, that was 20 years ago, so he would have been, like, what, 30 at the time when that happened? But then the training would have happened probably prior to Revenge of the Sith, so, like, that's X amount of time. So I was just trying to run through the math in my head, and I was like, what is the age conversion? Like, we know for dogs what it is. What is the Yoda age conversion? Like, were they training him? I guess, like, if he was, like, a young Jedi, I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, they take them when they're basically kids. They argued about Anakin being too old when he started, and he was, like, 8. So, yeah, I guess it makes sense that he was just a real a young wee Grogu when they scooped him up to, like, do Jedi training. But it's wild to think about that, though, in, like, a moralistic standpoint.
So what are you doing, Jedi? So I think that there are some questions about since we don't know, we only know Yoda, and obviously we knew Yaddle.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Just to take a moment.
Ahsoka said she knew only one. Okay. So it's
well, so Yaddle.
Yaddle erasure.
Yaddle canonically, I believe, the report is that she withdrew from the Jedi Council after the Phantom Menace sometime before Attack of the Clones, and Ahsoka doesn't enter the scene until after Attack of the Clones. So it's not Yaddle erasure totally. It's kind of Yaddle erasure, though. We'll probably never hear the word Yaddle on The Mandalorian unless, like, Yoda and Yaddle got it on and the result was Grogu.
There's only two of the species that we've ever heard of ever. And weren't they on Coruscant at the same time?
Yes. So, very likely, but we don't know. I mean, I don't know that Disney wants to, like, say, like, Yoda had sex. You know? I don't know. I don't know if they want to put that in our head, but whether they want to or not, it's there.
I prefer not, just not even because of that, but just because also, like, having watched so many movies growing up where it's just like, oh, there's two Indian characters. Oh, they're definitely related because they're the only two Indian characters. So they have to be connected to each other. I would prefer that not be the case. Like, there are more of us than just us two.
That's fair.
But, yeah,
maybe it's more like how gremlins procreate. Oh, you know, maybe, dude, it's like bright light exposure, eating after midnight.
I don't want to see, like, little green balls
maybe
popping
that's
out of Yoda's
what happened
back.
To Yoda,
what are you doing
Grogu
here?
Popped out of his back.
Well, so I know no one wants to hear this term, especially not
prompt.
Kevin. I know what no one wants to hear about a Force dyad, but. Anakin and Grogu were born the same year. Well, I'm just trying to think of like the possible origins of Grogu. And we know about Anakin's origins, that he was just kind of formed, right? By the Force.
That's right.
Maybe that's a possible origin for Grogu.
It's possible. I think the show will eventually illuminate it for us.
Tell
I think
us.
Like the show has determined like we're going to demystify Yoda effectively. So, you know, that's happening. That's definitely happening. And this episode took like a big leap in that direction. And I think something that like can get lost in like the Grogu, really, you know, of it all. Like I feel like we're missing out on like some really important character stuff to weigh in on.
Yeah.
The fact that he was trained by, you know, I don't know if this is a direct quote, but like multiple masters, right? Multiple people trained him. And we know who a bunch of the Jedi Knights were during that time based on the prequel movies. So like you can envision Ki-Adi Mundi chilling with Grogu, or Mace Windu and Grogu, or Plo Koon and Grogu, or you know, or Yoda and Grogu, or Obi-Wan Kenobi and Grogu. And he was allegedly there during the attack on the temple, which we know is perpetrated by Anakin Skywalker. And you can imagine, at least I can imagine, the world in which, if it wasn't Obi-Wan who got him out of there, that Obi-Wan could have some sort of role to play in, like, the keeping of Grogu safe. Like, the point being that, like, I now really feel like we've opened up a level of backstory to this character that I would almost just like bet that this is where it's going to go, is that they will show us some of that stuff.
Yeah.
We know that there's an Obi-Wan Kenobi series coming to Disney Plus, that is happening. Whether it's Grogu is a piece of that show, or they like, get us souped up for that show by having an episode of The Mandalorian that's a Grogu flashback that contains Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan Kenobi. Like, This is the world that we are occupying now based on the events of this episode. To say that that's anything less than like truly monumental, you know, is really underselling it as far as it pertains to like the greater Star Wars canon. Kevin, your questions about Grogu's age, I think that there's a lot of deliberation about this right now, that like, so were you just training babies? You guys were just training babies to be Jedi?
But they were. And we sort of established that, didn't we? Like in the prequel.
At really, really, really young ages. But I think that there is some question about, like, this revelation indicates one of two things. One is that, like, Baby Yoda is not Baby Yoda, and that he's, like, more like teenage Grogu. Teenage Grogu, like that he is like that he's an adolescent, that he's like, you know, if he's like, you know, in high school or not, I don't know. But like that might be how old he is, and like is leaning on cuteness and is like playing a lot of that stuff up, and actually is further along than we know. And then there's the other possibility that's being posited, is that Yoda had a lot more time left on the clock biologically, should have had, and like died either of like sickness or you know, fatigue or whatever, just like the stress of it all, and that would allow for Baby Yoda to be actual Baby Yoda instead of more advanced than we think. So I'm not able to credit the person who was bringing this up. I think it was either in the Discord or it was an email, and I don't have it out in front of me, but someone was talking about how it's one of those two things most likely.
I mean, sort of. Like, I feel like we're not going to get full. I mean, like, I don't know. It's super weird because we're talking about an alien species that we don't know, and we don't know what their physiology, their, you know, like how they age, like what they consider adolescence. Like, we don't know any of it, right? So we're just positing based on us humans, which is our want to do, is to base everything on ourselves. But like when you look at it, like the episode where, you know, they were on Navarro and he's in school, how he was acting felt way closer to like a 4-year-old at max to me, because of behavior. Like if I'm imagining that this is an adolescent teenager and he's literally stealing cookies from a kid, he's a bully, and like that's problematic. So we can go down that path, that's fine. But I just see him more closer at this point, knowing what we know. Maybe he is closer to like a Anakin age in the prequels, and I feel like that could track okay. And that works for me, and that's fine. And as he gets older, we haven't gotten to the teenage part yet. That's another 100 years, which still could line up to Yoda being 900 and dying, guys. Like that's a high possibility. That's fine to die at 900. The other thing is too, We always, you know, I mentioned the Gus aspect of it, but this is something that maybe a lot of people don't know, is that while the 7 year thing, people reference that's like a dog year, seven human, or one dog year, 7 human years. That is an average, basically, like depending on the size of the dog and the type of dog, that number changes as they get older. So early on, you could be like a 1 year old dog is 7 years old, two is like 14. As you get older, that reduces. So like it's 5 years now. Now the conversion rate is like 4 years. So that can still track here. And I think that can still work, where as he gets older, his differential in ages between us and them changes. It's not always going to be like one X year equals X. Like that's, you know, that is even how it works for dogs. And that's what we always reference. So I do feel like there's a pathway here that still works, that he's still kind of a baby Yoda. Maybe he's more of a toddler Yoda, but I don't know. I feel like it tracks okay, and it doesn't necessarily mean like Yoda died young.
It also makes sense too that when he was taken, his socialization stopped.
Yeah,
you know, so his maturity level kind of peaked. It stopped at that point, and it wasn't until Mando found him that he began to have actual interactions with people again that weren't just terrifying or, you know, rote. So like people were feeding him and probably that was about it. But now he's actually interacting with the world and has like a constant companion. So it would make sense that he would be a little less mature, just because of, you know, stunted emotional growth. And, you know, Ahsoka says that there are parts of his mind that are dark, either because he's intentionally repressing that, or because, you know, as we do as people, as like a psychological, like trying to keep himself okay, he's, you know, repressing memories that are bad.
Right.
I'm guessing that when we get to Tython and, you know, he communes with the Force, we might get a lot of that backstory as well.
Yeah. Flashback episode's coming. I don't know if it's this season or what, but like I feel like it feels likely to me.
When they said that, like, oh, go to, like, I'm wondering if like that's the end of the season, and of course like someone shows up and it's just like who shows up and like what that could be. I mean, in my head, despite of everything I said, like, can you imagine like a Mark Hamill de-aging, like, because like he'll be forming the school relatively soon. Yeah, I
that possibility some weeks ago. I'm going to look real smart.
Mace Windu showing up.
Yes. You know?
I guess as a Force ghost, which would be interesting.
We never saw the body.
I guess that's true. I guess that's true. I would love Mace Windu back. We talked about, the Obi-Wan series. Like, when Josh, when you were just saying that, like, in my head, imagining, like, Kit Fisto and stuff in there, I'd be like, oh, that's so awesome. But that's a whole other show and a possible future podcast. But there's just a lot of cool stuff with it and, like, where they can go from here and seeing that backstory. And maybe this isn't going to be where they explore it, but we see it later. But I don't know. It just, there is just so much cool stuff that they have presented here about like what it, you know, what baby Yoda, now possibly toddler Yoda, you know, like what the backstory is there, when they were starting. I love the idea of like, Latanya, what you just said about like the idea of stunted growth. Like he's just, you know, like he has arrested development, you know, which obligatory, like, this is a story about one Force kid and the one bounty hunter who can save him. This is Arrested Jedi. Anyway.
Mando Bluth.
Yeah.
George Mando.
But yeah, like the that stuff is super interesting. I like the idea. And it is curious, of course, the, you know, like, I can't train him. I did hear someone told me that, like, Ahsoka Tano, despite just being called a Jedi, is not a Jedi anymore. Like, I guess is like left the order or something.
At least she withdrew.
Yes. Yeah. So like maybe that's part of the reason. It's just like, I can't train him, or it's the age thing. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot there. I don't know how he's going to like end up getting trained, if he will get trained.
There's an ancient proverb, I believe, that fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering.
Obviously, I have feelings about these things, about especially in the prequel, how they addressed it as like no emotions, which I think is a bit ludicrous. But I do, I find that part fascinating, especially what we've been presented with, I think, in the new sequels versus, and some of what we get here, the idea of like he has fear and the danger of fear. And I always was curious, like, okay, I guess that's just some, like, the moral philosophy of just, like, if you're afraid of something, you'll be angry at it, and then you'll hate it, and that'll, like, turn to bad stuff. I get that. But it doesn't always mean you're going to head that direction. Fear could also lead to curiosity, and curiosity could lead to understanding. But neither here nor there. What I do think is interesting is the idea of what the Force is. The new trilogy, kind of when Luke was talking to Rey, had this idea that the Force just is a thing, and it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to go evil or bad. But I read it as almost like it amplifies what's in you in a way. And like the idea of if there is a bit of darkness, if you tap into the Force, it will amplify that darkness if you allow it, or even accidentally. And that can lead to bad stuff. So that to me is what's super interesting about like the fear part of it. It is like, his fear, if he taps into the Force, is going to get amplified. That can lead to amplified anger, and that leads to a very, very dark path. So I find that stuff like really, really fascinating and really interesting. And I don't, again, know if we're going to delve into a lot of that stuff, because that is a Jedi series, not a Mandalorian series. But like I said, this episode got me excited about the Jedi again.
Well, I think it's at the very least something we can dive into on this podcast, which we will in just a moment. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back to talk more about the Jedi. All right, well, let's talk about it, because LaTanya, we're up to that moment, philosophy of the stars, and I know you want to talk a lot about the Jedi.
I do. This week's philosophy of the stars is about the philosophy of the Jedi. One of the cool things about Star Wars is that it has canon, non-canon, and metacanon material. The metacanon being a combination of behind-the-scenes tales of creation, continuity of that lore, and then just things that people in the actual real world have imposed upon the series itself. And that brings us to the philosophy of the Jedi, and I'll explore it in terms of its canon, non-canon, and metacanon material. So we'll start with canon. According to the pop culture philosopher in their 2015 essay, Jedi Philosophy, there are three main philosophies or religions which influence the Jedi way, and a little bit of round table chivalry that fits in there as well. The Jedi way is a synthesis of three Eastern religions or philosophies with an overlay of courtly behavior drawn from the medieval knights of Europe. The most important source for the Jedi way is Taoism, an ancient Chinese philosophy whose name is originally translated as the way. The two main goals of Taoism are to achieve balance and to exist in harmony with nature and with all living beings. This energy is expressed in the world in the form of two equal opposing forces, the yin, or more passive force, and the yang, the active force. The tension between yin and yang creates qi, or life energy. Qi is found in all things, but particularly living creatures, and the manipulation of qi is at the root of many traditional practices, including acupuncture, feng shui, and tai chi. Masters bring the many mystical powers similar to those of the Jedi. The second major source of the Jedi way is Buddhism, specifically Zen, a variant largely found in Japan. As with most forms of Buddhism, Zen preaches non-attachment, the letting go of emotional bonds to people, places, and things. The ultimate goal is to reach a selfless state of dispassionate compassion for all living things. Like the Jedi Knights, Buddhist monks are celibate. The third source for the Jedi worldview is Zoroastrianism, an ancient Persian religion in which viewed the world as an eternal battlefield between the forces of good and evil. Although Zoroastrianism has only small pockets of practitioners left in the modern world, echoes of it are present in many places, including the way many modern Christians conceptualize the devil as a force opposite and nearly equal to God. And finally, the philosophy is overlaid with the code of chivalry based on that practiced by medieval knights of Europe, who operated by a code of ethics, including strict rules for combat, high standards of courtesy, warrior virtues such as honor, loyalty, and bravery, and a veneration of courtly love. The knightly facet of the Jedi is exemplified in the movies by their presence for the elegant lightsaber as opposed to the barbaric blaster. However, there is a clear conflict in all of these ideas. the remarkable synthesis that was achieved in placing these together still doesn't make the disparate elements not compelling. The first, most subtle of these conflicts is between Taoism and Buddhism. The Tao of Te Ching, the chief text of Taoism, it says, let go of your desires in order to observe the source, but allow yourself desires in order to observe the manifestations. This indicates that both attachment and non-attachment are seen as having value. The Buddhist seeks to transcend the world and earthly existence, whereas the Taoist seeks to be fully integrated into the world. This becomes an issue when the Jedi Council is aloof and independent from politics, yet simultaneously also deeply involved in the galactic political landscape. The second conflict is between Taoism and Zoroastrianism. There is no good and evil in Taoism, only balance and imbalance. Neither yin nor yang is preferable, and both are necessary, as opposed to Zoroastrianism, where the ultimate goal is the triumph of good and the eradication of evil. The disconnect shows up in the second series of movies, 1, 2, and 3, where the prophecy of the balance of the force may mean the rise of evil. And the third conflict is between Buddhism and Zoroastrianism, which is a very easy word to pronounce, by the way. The concept between the fight between good and evil is somewhat alien to Buddhism. A fallen Buddhist would not be equal and opposite to the force of a good Buddhist, but simply someone who had become too caught up in the illusions and the material temptations of the ordinary world. The final conflict is between Buddhism and chivalry, because Buddhism preaches non-attachment, but one of the key characteristics of medieval knights was a passionate attachment. And also, in as much as chivalry stems from Christianity, it carries the idea that love as a powerful redemptive force. The disconnect creates some of the most powerful paradoxes in the movies. In the first series, 4, 5, and 6, Yoda and Obi-Wan counsel control of emotions and warn Luke against the dangers of his affections for his friends and his unreasonable love for his father. And yet, Luke's decision to ignore this seemingly wise advice provides him the high points of the first series. Conversely, the second series suffers from taking its doctrine of non-attachment too seriously. The Jedi Council consequently comes across as cold and uncaring, a fact that drives Anakin into a more hot-blooded arms of the dark side. All of this aside, let's not even get started on the celibacy part. That clearly has worked so well and given us, you know, we already talked about the possible Grogu of it all. But there are also other instances wherein either people who were Jedi fell in love and ended up having children, or untold stories of that kind of thing. In terms of some of the continuing canon, this brings us back to Stoicism, which I think was the first topic that we had in Philosophy of the Stars.
Yep.
And according to a paper, Stoicism and the Philosophies of the Jedi and the Sith, by William O. Stevens, the Stoic ideas appear in Star Wars. Many elements of the Jedi philosophy, and even a couple of the they're all in the room. The elements of the Sith philosophy are very Stoic in character. Consider Yoda in The Empire Strikes Back. When Yoda offers to take Luke to the Jedi Master he seeks, Luke insists that be done immediately. Instead, Yoda suggests they first eat. When Luke objects, Yoda replies, "For the Jedi, it is time to eat as well." Timeliness is a virtue for Yoda. Why is it a virtue? Because just as what one does and how one does matter, so too when one acts matters. Whereas Luke often doesn't act appropriately for the moment, Yoda's acts are timely. Timeliness is a key virtue for the Jedi as they are for the Stoic. He continues, Yoda never gets angry. He says, fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. This sounds familiar. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering.
Kind of feel like Yoda got angry once.
At least.
At least. Like when Luke was like, I'm not going to do the X-Wing thing.
Yeah.
It's like Yoda like was like, God damn it, this kid. I can't believe I'm stuck with Luke Skywalker.
I've seen Yoda's little like angry stank face.
Yeah, he throws a little fit sometimes. Yeah.
He also throws the Senate.
As I say you do, not what I do. I don't know. I can't do it on the fly.
It's okay. Yeah. Later, Yoda tells Luke, anger, fear, aggression. The dark side of the Force are they. This is the logic of the Jedi. One, fear leads to anger, then to hate, then to aggression. Two, aggression leads to the suffering of both aggressor and victim. That Yoda never seen to suffer implies he is never fearful, angry, hateful, or aggressive. The Stoic, like Yoda, lacks the vices of fear, anger, hatred, and aggression. But does rejection of aggression require pacifism? Not necessarily. And the parallels between Yoda, other Jedi, and the Stoics don't stop there. Stoics believe in all the virtues, wisdom, justice, courage, self-control, piety, and generosity, and all are perfected reason applied to various spheres of conduct. To continue the thread here, we see in the non-canon origins of Yoda from legends that he was originally from a planet that wasn't in the Jedi archives, wanted to be a simple merchant, and ended up landing on Dagobah, where he found Master Nabaka and potentially trained with this master and a friend of his, who he landed on the planet with, to the level of Jedi Knight, became a Jedi Master at 96 and was offered to join the Jedi Council, trained many Jedi Padawans to knighthood. But when he crash landed on Dathomir and battled the witches of Dathomir, there's kind of a gap that happens.
Yoda, this is all pre-Disney stuff, which means like pre-Disney. This is like this. These are ideas that people like creators have had around Yoda.
Exactly. Non-canon things.
Yeah.
So, you know, many of the Jedi in these non-canon things begin to integrate the dark side of the Force into their teaching. And they're called either the Potentia or the Potentium. And they fell away from the teaching of the Jedi Order in order to practice that kind of melding or like become gray is what it's been referred to more recently. Now, when it comes to metacanon, there's an actual religion.
There's an actual Jedi religion like that you can follow.
Yes.
In our world.
IRL, there is a religion. It's called Jediism. And it is a religion based on the observance of the Force. Ubiquitous and metaphysical power that the Jedi, a follower of Jediism, believes to be the underlying fundamental nature of the universe. It finds its roots in the philosophy similar to those presented in the epic space opera Star Wars. It is a religion in and of itself, and you can find more information about that at the Temple of the Jedi Order.org.
Josh Wigler bookmarking for later.
Yeah, seriously.
Josh Wigler searching for peace.
Be careful, Josh. This is how Scientology started.
Seriously.
Oh, true. Good point.
Jediism is not the same as Judaism. As Judaism, just, you know, they just sound similar.
Yeah.
So this religion believes in the Force and its inherent worth and the life around it, the sanctuary of the human person. They oppose the use of torture or cruel and unusual punishment, including the death penalty. And they want a society governed by laws grounded in reason, compassion, fear, not fear or prejudice. And there are several more tenets that they have as well. But specifically for this episode, it is often argued by the larger fandom that Ahsoka is kind of the perfect embodiment of the Jedi ideology. And why Ahsoka is the best Jedi by another Josh, just this Josh Voigt. Sorry, I'm just joshing all over the place today.
Too many Joshes.
Writes, Ahsoka Tano, first introduced in the Clone Wars animated film, not to be confused with the second Star Wars film of the prequels, Attack of the Clones.
Kevin, you listening?
At first glance, a bratty little teen that was constantly argued with fan favorite Anakin, she grew over the course of 7 seasons of the Clone Wars animated show, from a bratty teen into a compassionate and caring Jedi, following the lessons of popular characters like Obi-Wan Kenobi and Anakin. She became a mix of these two Jedi and with the wisdom of Kenobi and the skills of Skywalker. However, her greatest asset is her empathy and compassion. And that's on clear display here. She has clear empathy and compassion for the people who are living inside of this like walled off world on this planet that she has gone to. Even though she's there to seek information, she's also there to liberate these people. Her empathy and compassion shine through immediately when she stops her little like sparring session with Mando and says, "I hope that, you know, you were sent here.
I hope we're talking about that cute little baby over there.
Talk about this little baby." And then just her whole like attitude and like Zen caring nature when she's force communing with little Grogu. And at the end, they give each other a little nod of respect. You know, who knows what they shared with one another that they aren't sharing with us or with Mando. So really, Ahsoka's moral compass has gotten her into trouble a lot, but it's what has led her to becoming one of the most revered and well-loved Jedi in the entirety of Star Wars.
Yeah, I'm so excited to get to know her better. You know, I don't know how much better we're going to get to know her on The Mandalorian. Mm-hmm. Is this the majority of Ahsoka content we're going to get for the show? Is this just like a runway for her to have her own platform on her own live action Disney Plus show? It's not that it doesn't matter. It definitely matters. I'm very interested in sign me up for your newsletter. You know, I want to know more. But it almost doesn't matter because there is so much that is built into this character to begin with that embodies so much of what you just discussed, about the ideas of the Jedi and what they are at their best and what they can be at their worst, and where they are in between those points, I think is a real sweet spot. You know, the idea of like the perils of organized religion and the values of organized religion, you know, the perils and values of being spiritual. And to know that there's so many stories out there that are threading the eye of that needle through this character just excites me endlessly. Really just has me very pumped up to explore all of that stuff. Kevin, like you were saying earlier, that like last week should have really exhibited like some of the ways in which like, you know, like Jedi mania is like not really your thing anymore. And like, you know, Star Wars is kind of like been like a prickly object in a lot of ways, but I am finding myself as excited about Star Wars as I've been since I was like, I don't know, like a 16-year-old. So a lot of it is because of the way that this character was handled in this episode. And Latanya, like seeing that reflected in a lot of the people who love Ahsoka because of like the deep well of history that she possesses, mm-hmm. being like, yeah, they really did that right. Well, if this is like doing that character justice, then I want to see what that's all about.
Yeah, very same. There's just something about the way that she moves that, and the way that she speaks. I don't even know how to explain it. It is a lot of the Zen, you know, that's supposedly wrapped up in the teachings, but it's also just that you can tell that that character has been through a lot. Right? That character's been through it. And she has seen a lot and experienced a lot and lost a lot. And she still kind of moves through the world like that like classic wandering, you know, shogun that we talk about often when we talk about The Mandalorian in a way that is ultimately to help people. But, you know, she wants to know where Thrawn is, and she wants to know where Thrawn is because I believe the last time Thrawn was seen, he was disappearing with Ezra. And so she wants to know whether or not that's going to lead her back to Ezra, but also wants to know what is going on with Thrawn. She's interested in justice and achieving that in a way that, you know, can bring some balance. And the way that she is so zen about everything, it seems like she is like accomplished a balance within herself. I love that character so much.
Yeah. I'm really amped up to do the deep dive. I'm pretty I'm pretty pumped at this point.
Not since the train, because I mean, I've been very open about how I wasn't, Star Wars wasn't like the biggest priority in terms of movies in my family when I was growing up. So I wasn't like the Star Wars kid, but when the Force Awakens trailer came out, I was very excited. I think that's one of the things that was so upsetting about how I was let down by that trilogy is because I was just pumped for those movies and like, you know, saved to be able to like get extra special seats to go and see them and all that kind of thing. I have not been as excited about the Star Wars universe since that trailer, honestly. Yeah.
We've got a ton of feedback for this episode.
Yay.
So let's get into as much of it as we possibly can. There's the question of how this episode played for casual fans, and it's posited by Dave in the Discord, who says, for people who aren't immersed in all the continuity related to this episode, how did this play? That's always my first question with Star Wars content like this. And I'd like to throw this to Grace, and the Ben behind the curtain, who both have some remarks, in this regard. For Grace, who has previously contributed feedback that has suggested like, Mandalorian's getting a little too Star Wars-y this season. Grace said, I love this one a whole lot more than previous episodes. It felt like it tied together what I felt like I was missing from the two previous episodes. I think because the thing Ahsoka is looking for doesn't feel like a Mando thing, it plays a bit better for me. From Ben says, this episode had me hooked from the first second to the last. The whole time I was thinking this could be the middle act of a beloved Star Wars movie. It was just that good. This episode made me realize just how much Mando is spiritually following in the footsteps of Han as a character. He keeps saying kid and calling the Force powers. And we see this new world he's inhabiting through his eyes in a similar way as seeing Han dealing with being introduced to the Force. And I really like thinking about him through that lens. It's almost like saying, what if Han was the focus and the hero of the original trilogy? Couldn't list everything that I love about this episode, but I just want to shout out some of the things I think were fantastic that I haven't seen called out yet. The Bell, the actress playing Elsbeth, Mando's very careful approach when he was first in town, and Grogu going and climbing into his chair. So a lot to love about this episode from the listeners of the podcast.
Yeah, I love seeing those comments as well in the Discord, which is a great community, by the way, to talk way more about this stuff if you feel like there aren't enough people to talk about in your life.
There's not going to be like the Clone Wars Rebels podcast that we're like gonna end this and then we're gonna do that. We're just unqualified on like every level. Like we're barely qualified to talk about the Mandalorian, but I'm basically live blogging my experience in the Discord, so if that sounds fun to you, I think it should be worth exploring.
I mean, on the point, though, of what, like, I don't know, it's so wild because, like, I get some of the feedback touched on this just now, and I get where we all are, where we're like, we want to know more about this character, being hyped about the Jedi again, and all that stuff, but I am concerned in the sense of, like, as much as I want that, like, this show is still The Mandalorian, right? And, like, if it becomes now, like the Ahsoka Tano show and the hunt for Thrawn and all this other stuff, we're sort of losing the thread of what the series is about. Like, to me, it makes more sense of like, maybe this is something that Mando pops in and out on and like connects later further on in Ahsoka Tano's journey and the hunt for Thrawn. So like, that's the part that I'm like getting a little sticky with, and I'm curious to see how they play it, because like Distill is supposed to be about like his journey and his journey with the kid. And in this context, this episode still works because it was still on that. But if we start following the other thread, it becomes less about that and more about, you know, the Jedi and their stuff. So that's the part that I hope they don't, like, as much as I want to, like, I think the show should still stay true to what this show is and not just be like, throw in at the fan stuff, or just rename it. I don't know. In season three, it's something else. But that's essentially my, like, I guess, bump against some of this stuff. As much as I love it, you know, like, we're talking a lot about the Jedi stuff in here, but like, you know, the Mando stuff I think was also really solid. Like the idea of like having to take care of this kid now, like it is on him. Like he thought, like, I'm gonna bring this kid here, and you know, he has to now accept that, like, oh, I do want this kid with me. I am like
that
dad.
Single dad life.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like,
he was so sad when he thought he was going to have to give little Grogu up.
Right. So like, that's all the parts that I think are really important for this character and this story and where it's headed. You know, like, and I am curious about a lot of this stuff. I'm curious about the Thrawn thing. Like, I don't know. I've heard the name, but I don't know anything. This is actually a really weird instance,
Kevin,
where.
Would you like to know more?
Well, I got that reference, which actually works into what I was going to say, because when we were watching this, for one instance, like, you know, my fiance, who I've talked about, like, is well aware of the Star Wars universe, but like me, doesn't know too deeply into the lore and knows probably not as deep as I do it on certain things, because as proven, they said the name Thrawn and she was just like, oh, this is something I know. I got that reference. Like, what's his name? Like Chekhov in Star Trek, in Star Trek 3, just running down. Like, I know this one. Yeah. You know, but she read apparently the only Star Wars book she's ever read were the Thrawn stuff. So she was a little familiar with that. And now, you know, she's aware that that's not continuity anymore. But so that was interesting. And what she was describing and how she was describing of what he's like is really fascinating. Like a more, you know, strategic, evil mastermind than like a physical force. So like that stuff is really interesting and really cool, but again, long way around to just go back to my original point of like, I don't want this show to be dominated by this other story that's happening, I guess.
Yeah, but I don't know. At the same point, and I totally get that, is like, this is the space that the Mandalorian himself is occupying, and he is partnered up with Grogu Grogu. I'm working on it with Grogu from the get-go, and that character is clearly so mythologically significant that I think that it's more natural than maybe even I thought it would be heading into this season that he would be linked to some of that stuff. So I'm open to it. I hear what you're saying though, and I just had a conversation with community building co-host Jess Sterling on the Patron Cast.
Yes.
This week, talking about that stuff and being like, she was like, is it a scorching take to say that I like season one more than season two? I don't think it's a scorching take. I definitely don't. I think that season one and season two are really different. I think season two is really, it's getting into M counts, you know, like it's going there. It's busting out, Grand Admiral Thrawn, who, Latanya said to me, rhymes with prawn, but he's no shrimp in the Star Wars universe, was the text that I received from Latanya. She was testing out her material.
Thanks. Those are things I said, and I stand by it.
I thought you did great, so I just wanted to shout you out with that great comment here on the podcast. That Mando is like moving into that stuff. And if that's not your bag, baby, and you prefer the Hercules and Xena type stuff from season one, I totally get that. I wonder where it's all gonna go. Will it be that like when this whole show is done, we're gonna like look back and like season one was a simpler time and the show got like really lost in its own Sarlacc pit of mythology? Or is it going to all have felt really natural? I don't know. I think because of the high level of execution so far, I'm pretty here for it.
Yeah,
I would say that. Go ahead, Kevin.
I'm here for it, and I'm fine if that part of the story comes into play. They've handled it well so far. I'm just saying, like, if we get a side episode that's essentially Ahsoka Tano's hunt for Thrawn, and Mando's not in there, it does become a shift into what the story is. And like, yeah, that's cool. I think that's interesting. And I'm, as a Star Wars fan, I'm gonna like look at this stuff and be really excited about that episode. But when thinking about it from a non-fan perspective and from a like how a show is structured and like what the show is doing, I don't need it to be a weekly Hercules and Xena. But you know what happened most of the time? Hercules and Xena were connected to the plot. And that's the parts that make me worried. As long as like it feels natural, it feels right, and they've done nothing to prove that that's not going to be the case. They've done everything to prove that they can.
Yeah, I think the least connected they've ever been was last week.
Mm.
By a lot.
Yes, but Mando was still like on the adventure at least, and that's my point. Like, if he's there, that's fine. But then I would say like part of the complaint then has to transfer over. As exciting as then we would find Mando tagging along and being a third, you know, a third seater in this adventure, like how we did last week, we have to then reflect that, I think, into the Ahsoka Tano story. Because, like, yes, that's more exciting than what we saw last week, but still the same. This complaint there has to still almost reflect the same. But that's a future that we're positing that doesn't exist yet.
Yeah, I think it's a real thing, but I don't know.
I would say that we're looking at possibly some permutations of these things. So I saw a couple tweets out there suggesting that, and I cannot remember, because there's so many. I cannot remember who tweeted this, but there was a suggestion that there might be kind of like the last one or two episodes of this season end up being almost an Avengers style, like good people we've met along the way team up to beat Moff
Gideon.
Moff Gideon.
I believe that's a Lovecraft team up, LaTanya, not an Avengers team up.
Right.
I mean, this is what they effectively did in season one, right? You know, in season one, it's like, let's go back to Navarro and let me call on Cara Dune. Let me call on Nick Nolte.
Yeah.
Let me call on all these folks.
Yeah, they're punching my baby in the face. Let me call on these people. Or it could be a backdoor pilot, you know, which is certainly not unheard of, especially in Star Wars. And we already know that they've got the Obi-Wan show in the works. Maybe there's other stuff they have in the works that we don't know about. I know that just from the reaction to this episode, if they were backdoor piloting an Ahsoka like show where she just deals with Thrawn and, you know, other people that along the way, people would love it and watch it and it would be great. So,
yeah. Yeah, I think the biggest issue there is, like, Rosario Dawson's really busy.
Yeah, she's kind of a big deal.
She's sort of a big deal. Like, does she got the time? It's like, I'll make the time.
She might make time for that Star Wars money. That Star Wars Disney money.
Yeah.
You know?
And she's I think she's going to be the star of DMZ on HBO Max, I'm pretty sure.
Mm.
So she's got a lot going on. But we do, thankfully, live in an age where, like, it's not like the days of TV once upon a time where, like, you can only be on one thing, you know? Like, we do live in a time where, like, you can have an actor be on multiple different shows, even, like, the lead on a few different shows. So hopefully we'll be able to make that work. I would like to see it. I'm curious to know the way in which it happens. And Kevin, I think that you are giving voice to a lot of people who feel very similarly, or at least have an eye on that that concern. I think that's definitely there. This is from Deshaun, who said, "Holy lightsaber action! Some of the best Jedi action sequences I've ever seen. Mm. So many really fun bits in there that highlight the power of the lightsaber slicing away a tree to cut a guy behind it. That was amazing. Lightsaber stuff in this was so good.
Yeah. I'm excited about Jedi.
It was so cool.
Yeah, the bell alone." She sliced that dude in half and took the bell with him, and it just fell to the ground with a like a weird clang. It was so cool.
Oh, so great. The sound design in this episode was so good. Yeah. Like the noise of the Beskar spear.
Yes. Hitting the Beskar that Mando was wearing was really cool. Like showing the heft to it and how it could actually stand up to a lightsaber.
Yeah. On the Thrawn tip, we were just talking about him a little tiny bit. Brendan Fitzpatrick writes in with a little bit of a description about Thrawn. Thrawn was first introduced in the Timothy Zahn, Heir to the Empire, trilogy of novels in what is now considered Legends canon. He's a Grand Admiral of the Imperial Fleet in charge of the Outer Rim at the time of the Empire. Thrawn is of a race known as the Chiss. I might be mispronouncing that, who are from beyond the Outer Rim. They have blue skin and red eyes. He's known for his tactical brilliance and his affinity for and use of art as a way of studying his enemies tactically. That sounds pretty cool to me. Yeah. And so if you want to like read the stuff that Thrawn is involved in, it's not canonical anymore, but they were a huge, like very much on my radar as a kid. Like I had friends who were huge into Star Wars, who were like, Heir to the Empire, holy shit. And I just never did it because I don't know how to read. But my friends who did know how to read really swore by it. And Thrawn is a big piece of Rebels, as I understand it. So I shall encounter Thrawn that way at some point in the next, like, 7 months. This is one more thing that I want to shout out before we start wrapping up. Ashley Eckstein, who provided the voice of Ahsoka Tano in Clone Wars and Rebels, had, like, a really big Instagram post about her character. being brought into live action. So just to read it, to like give a little further context of like what this episode meant to a lot of people. She writes, "To understand Ahsoka Tano is to understand what she means to people. Millions of people are meeting Ahsoka for the first time after watching her in The Mandalorian, and I'm excited for them to hopefully go back and watch her journey in Clone Wars and Rebels. Millions of fans already know Ahsoka, and her presence has come to mean more to them than words in a script. In The Clone Wars, Ahsoka became the eyes of the audience. Viewers experienced the show through Ahsoka, and even though these stories happened in a galaxy far, far away, her feelings and emotions are very relatable to our everyday lives. Ahsoka's strength has inspired, changed, and literally saved millions of lives all over the world. In turn, Ahsoka has become a beacon of hope, light, and genuine goodness. Everyone's relationship with Ahsoka is very different because she triggers the memory of a certain point in a person's life where she's inspired them. Even in the darkest times, Ahsoka brings people joy, and that's what truly matters. Ahsoka taught us that you don't need to carry a sword to be powerful. And Dave Filoni, who, by the way, wrote and directed this episode and did an insane job, reminded me that kindness is powerful. After 12 years and hopefully many more to come of having Ahsoka in our lives, hashtag Ahsoka lives in all of us now. I am blown away by everyone's kindness. I've read all of your messages, DMs, comments, text messages, and emails, and to say thank you doesn't feel adequate enough to express what your kind words mean to me. It's my wish that Ahsoka continues to bring people joy, light, and most importantly, hope. This is the way of Ahsoka Tano." And Rosario Dawson chimed in on that as well. "Thank you forever for your brilliance. Ashley, I'm so honored to be a part of Ahsoka's legacy alongside you." And I know that there was a lot of people who, much like they were able to bring Katie Sackhoff in to play Bo-Katan, wondering or wishing that they had been able to bring Ashley Eckstein in to play Ahsoka Tano. But it sounds like the two people responsible bring this character to life, whether it was through voice or through the physicality that Rosario Dawson literally physically embodied this character, seems like at the very least they are on message with one another. It's nice to see. I love to see it. Some kindness in the fandom is a good thing.
It's great.
Yeah. Let's talk about the egg. So the quest for the egg continues. The quest for the egg, Kevin, it's you and I competing against one another at this point. Latanya's out of it. Every episode of The Mandalorian needs to end with Mando and Grogu going off into outer space.
And this is a tricky one, because when we determined it, and I don't know where I fall, so I'm leaving it really to the audience here, and we can discuss amongst the three of us. But we said that the ending has to be, like, the last shot needs to be them flying off into space. And
that is that how we specifically worded it?
Is that what we said?
That's last shot? That's what I thought, because I was just like, oh, when they fly off into space, like, if there's more, like, technically this episode ended with, you know, not even this one, I mean, like, a previous one, does that count? Because it's them leaving off into space, but there was something else that happened. And it's just like, no, it has to be, that's the shot. And I haven't gone back and listened to our episode, so I cannot guarantee this or whatever. So this is where we run into an issue, because it is technically the same continuous shot. They fly off, but then we don't follow them. We follow, Ahsoka as she walks off. So, like, what does this count as is the big question. Because big obviously, question. If it doesn't, it helps me. If it does, it could help you. So I don't know where to fall, and I don't want to make a vote that's going to be biased. You know?
Yeah, you want that egg badly.
I would love that egg. I want that ostriched deviled egg, please. So
a disgusting thing that you want. It grosses me out so much that that's what you want.
Makes me want it even more now.
I hate it. I hate it. I hate what you're asking for.
I love that we get to have a topicality debate about this, because we need to go basically to the tape and figure out exactly what it was, what the words were that we said for the bet in the first place.
Yeah, so we'll go back. We'll review the tape. I don't think we're adequately prepared for it this moment in time. So this is a little bit of a lingering cliffhanger going into next week. Next week needs to continue the trend at the very least, or I'm out if this does not qualify. Of course, I would argue that it qualifies and is a different case than last week's episode, because Mando and Grogu go off into space, and then we go into a completely different series of events.
Right.
Whereas in this case, Mando and Grogu fly off, and we're still in the scene as Ahsoka walks away. So it's like the episode did end with them flying off into space. I would argue that this counts.
I mean,
but why don't we let's leave it to the listeners?
I would say to the listeners and let's see what the tape said, I guess. Because I remember specifically asking for this reason of when we first started, where it's like, what's going to count and what's not.
I thought it was last shot.
That's what I thought, but
I do want to hear the tape. I would entertain any arguments on either side and see what the actual wording is.
All right. Well, maybe also next week you have an impartial party who is going to join the podcast. Well, it's Mike Bloom's going to be on next week. How about that? Mike Bloom is going to be on the Mando podcast because I'm not going to be able to make it next week. Mike Bloom's going to show up. He'll be here to party with Kevin and LaTanya as I probably off screen get destroyed in the egg argument would be my guess.
Oh, no.
I'll be quiet in a corner just crying because I missed out on the egg. And more importantly, because Kevin gets to eat a deviled ostrich egg, which is so disgusting. It's just like the foulest idea.
I mean, we don't know it's disgusting until we try it. So we'll have to say. Also, this is just
I'm aware.
This is revenge for your Spider-Man 2 take. So that's karma coming.
You haven't even heard my Spider-Man 3 takes, which are coming this week on Everything is Super. Kevin and I are getting into Spider-Man 3 with special guest Professor Strunk. Going to be swinging in because Spider-Man 3 is a big movie. We need a third person to show up and coach us through it. So more Mando next week. I will not be here, but you guys will have a great time holding it down, I am sure. LaTanya, what else is going on in your neck of the woods?
I'm moving. So
hey,
that's going to happen way too soon, and I'll be exhausted from that.
That'll be fun. It's a good kind of tired.
Yeah, it's a good kind of tired. So once I'm done doing that, you can probably find me dancing to Moving On Up and posting on Twitter at LK Starks.
Hell yeah. All right. LK Starks. Kevin's at Kev Mahadeo. Kevin, anything to plug? Anything to say?
Nothing to plug. I did, you know, we didn't. Really, we mentioned it earlier, but the Michael Biehn scene I had to call out, though, that confrontation, I really, really loved it. Again, we were very all, and this is my worry, right? We spent the entire episode talking about everything except the other parts of the episode. So, you know, again, just voicing that semi-concern. But I don't know that that's necessarily true. Isn't it?
I mean, we talked a lot about Grogu. We talked a ton about Baby Yoda.
Didn't talk a lot about that classic, I got no quarrel with you.
Right. Like, I love that confrontation, right? I love the saving of the people trapped. I love the villager that, like, there was so much said, I think, in that sequence, especially the villager running out before Mando even showed up. I think is such
whose name I'm blanking on, but is a Disney Imagineer.
Yeah, I remember Discord's mentioned that, which is really awesome. And so, like, I love that, you know, like that's such a weird thing. Cause, like, you know, props to Filoni again for the writing. Like they had a character arc for someone who barely spoke, but like, it was a true character arc. I love that. The confrontation, like my one complaint about this episode is the fact that we're not going to get more Michael Biehn. Cause like, I did love that. I love that. Like, oh, who do you think's winning? Like that conversation.
He's just happy to have been here, though. You know,
he is.
You and guys, like, remembered?
If you get Star Wars, you do Star Wars, as we've said before, Josh. But like, man, I just loved how his character was being presented as that. Like, I love that type of character that almost just like, well, you know what? This isn't my business. My side lost. I'm gonna go. Like, there's just something great about that. So like, it was one complaint. It's that we lost that character who I really loved, and I love that confrontation. Which was so Western, right? Like the show off that no one has pulled their gun yet. There's a conversation and it's just one shot. So, you know, that's another aspect of this episode that I really did really like a lot. And, you know,
yeah,
I think
it's taken straight from that Leone movie too, right? Fistful of Dollars.
Yep.
I think.
A Fistful of Dollars, which is not to be confused with A Fistful of Paintballs or A Few Paintballs More.
Which I just podcasted about on the community podcast. Speaking of a bean allergy. Do you get the joke? The bean allergy? Kevin, do you get that?
I don't think.
Annie had a bean allergy and his name's Michael Biehn.
Oh boy. Wow. No, just that's
really
a bad pun.
Putting all that into
a bad pun.
The pun strikes
Mandalore back. Works, right. But
yeah. I think bean allergy is pretty good. It's just for a very, 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 very small audience.
Do you have a bean allergy, though? If anything, we have a bean, like, I don't know what the word is. Like, we like beans.
I'm on a bean diet.
Yeah, we need more bean.
Yeah. Need more beans. Need more Michael Biehns. Now, we're just happy to have him here at all. I, you know, Hicks was like my favorite character as a kid. I was like, oh, I love Hicks. And to see Michael Biehn here at all, I was pleased. I was very pleased. however brief. All right, we'll be back next week, or you guys will be back next week. More Mando, either way, next week. But for now, we have spoken. Until then, everybody, take care. Bye.